We're doing
Bamidbar Perachas Pasuk Yedas. Perachas Pasuk Yedas. Yeah, Perachas Pasuk Yedas in Bamidbar. Parshas Bahalosha. Okay. So, as you probably know, originally the designees to do the Avodah for Klal Yisrael was the Bechorim, the firstborns. Right, they were saved in Mitzrayim, and they were, so to speak, acquired by God to become the Ovdei Hashem in the Mikdash. Right, and that didn't continue because why? You know, Chet HaEgel. So the Chet HaEgel, so arguably they were the leaders, and they didn't really lead appropriately. They didn't stop it from happening. And what happened was, Shevet Levi as a whole didn't do the Chet HaEgel, and they persecuted those who did. They took the, you know, they became the ones who judged the people and helped the Klal overcome and break away from the Chet HaEgel. So they became the new designees to be the Ovdei Hashem in the Mikdash.
Where did they get?
Killed. Those who did Nisa of the Sword, those who did the Sinaitiga, some Basak. Yeah. Hegu-ish, nothing like that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Right. So they were, but then if you want to say the lesser version, you say they did do the Hegu. Okay? So as such, they were separated themselves from the sin of the Egel, and thereby merited to be the future permanent of the Hashem. Okay. Now, in doing so, they became, there was like this process of swapping, swapping out the of the Hashem of the Bechoros for the Kohanim. There was a whole redemption process, and they were sort of extra, and they were extra levium, so then they gave money for the.
It was extra
levium
over the Bechoros.
I think so. A few extra, if that's the order. I mean, one of them was extra. I think it was the Bechoros were extra. The levium were extra, I think. Right. I know, it's funny that's the case, but I mean, they're close in number, but I forget exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole question how why there are so few Bechoros. So, but it does seem that there were. Okay, whatever. That's a different story. So what happened was so the Torah describes. Let's say I guess we could start at Pasuk Tasvav maybe. Okay. Yeah. Acharichein yavo halavim la'avodas ol moed, and then the levim will come to serve the avodah ol moed in the Mishkan. V'tirta osam ve'inafta osam tenufan. You retire them, and you wave them. They are given to me from amongst Klal Yisrael. Tachas pitras kol rachem, b'chor kol mivnei Yisrael lakachti osam li. And in replacement, instead of the firstborns, I took them to me. Right? Ki li kol b'chor mivnei Yisrael b'adam v'abehema b'yam hakosi kol b'chor b'yatz Moshe Mikdash yosam li. Because to me, all b'choros were designated the day that I, you know, hit the Bechoros Mitzrayim, and I saved them, so I designated them to me. Right? That's what Rashi says. Ki li kol b'chor, sheli hayu ha-Bechoros v'kav ha-din. By din, the Bechoros were really designated to God. Sheiganti aleihem in Bechor Mitzrayim, lakachti asam li. So I guarded them, I protected them, saved them from the Makas Bechoros, and thereby saved their life, and thereby took them to me, designated them to me. Until they made mistake, erred in the sin of the Egel, and now I'm taking the Levium in their stead. Okay, fine, let's keep reading the Pasuk. Ve'akachas ha'Levium, tachas kol b'chor b'vnei Yisrael. And I took the Levium in place of every b'chor in b'nei Yisrael.
Was the b'chorim in replacement of
Reuven? Oh, I don't know, that's a good question. Was Reuven, I don't know. Reuven was the Bechor. I know, he was originally going to have the greatness. That was like, I don't know,
wasn't
good
that
question.
Wasn't guy Yosef's kid, wasn't he supposed to have just a double portion?
He was supposed to have everything.
I find double portion.
I thought he was supposed to have also the Bechor, the Kahuna, the Maluch, a lot of things. I don't know. Good question. I don't know. You have to look into that. Okay? Then it says like this. So now look at this pasuk. Okay? And read this pasuk and pay attention to anything in the semantics, which is interesting. Okay? See if you pick it up. Etnos Leviim, and I gave the Leviim Nisunim Aaron Levanav, given over to Aaron and his sons, because the Leviim were like servants of the Kohanim. Right? Fine. Mitoch Bnei Israel, from amongst Bnei Israel, La'avod es avodas Bnei Israel, to do the avodah of Bnei Israel be'al Moed, u'lechaper al Bnei Israel, and to atone for Bnei Israel, v'lo yiyah b'Bnei Israel negaf, and there won't be amongst Bnei Israel a plague, b'geshes Bnei Israel al HaKodesh, and Bnei Israel approaches the Kodesh. Okay?
When is it referring to?
So, what it's saying is that he's basically taking the Ovidim, designating them for the Kohanim, to serve the Bnei Israel and the Olmoid, and to atone for them. And this way there won't be a plague when, I guess, Bnei Israel improperly approaches the Kodesh. So, what's your question? When? I don't know now. Yes, or whatever. That's not what I'm referring to.
Why do they need the Levium to replace the firstborn? Like, why are they tying them, and how do they help to stop some sort of plague from approaching the sanctuary?
Okay. So that's what Rashi says in the second Rashi, Lo Yabnei Yishal Negev. He says, Shalom Yitztarchu L'Geshes HaLaKodesh. So Bnei Yisrael won't need to approach the Kodesh. Shem Yikshu Yeh Negev. Because if they do approach, then there'll be a plague. And I think the pshat is that they're going to approach with the wrong ideas. You see, they're prone to having wrong ideas, as you see with the Chere Egal. And there's a danger in approaching the Mikdash. You could look at God as if he's in the house and make him like physical. So there's a risk of a person trying to approach too close. So it sounds like they're at risk of not being able to control themselves and trying to approach and having wrong ideas. And it's part of the job of the Levium and the Kohanim to guard the Mikdash and to prevent people from just entering in and pursuing their fantasies and all that. So that's what I think it means, that that's part of their job, is to help atone for the Jews and to prevent them from this Negev. Yeah?
So why
do
we move?
Is there a difference between the firstborn of the Levim and the rest of them?
No,
there's no difference between the firstborn, no. So the Chaper Al-Bnei Israel? I think on their sins, I think. On behalf of them. Chaper Al-Bnei Israel, yeah. Yeah, someone else? What's that?
Why is there a question? What does that have to do with anything?
What's that? Oh, he's explaining why there's going to be a negaf, why there would be a negaf. So he's saying is, because otherwise, I guess if the Bechorim were there, they would have to approach, right? Your regular Yisraelim would be approaching the Mikdash to do their avodah, and then they would be at risk of approaching too close and to end up having the wrong ideas and having a plague. So now they're not going to have to approach because they have Levium, or the ones who are in charge of the approaching, instead of them. The Kohan and Levium. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Okay?
One more question. How do we know that the Levium are more qualified to approach the Kodesh than the rest of the nation? Like, were they chosen on a merit basis? It seems like, you know, like you maybe run into the same problem that people can.
Yes, so they were chosen based upon the entire Shevet as a whole didn't sin in the Chet Egel.
Okay.
And they took care of justice and eradicated the Avodah Zarah after the Chet Egel. You know, they were able to do that, to put aside their allegiance to their friends and to execute judgment against them, and yeah.
Yeah. In the pasuk, when it says, So is it saying, is it referring to the negev that would have occurred because of what happened at Chiyuna Egel, or is it referring to a future negev that would happen from approaching the Mikdash?
I would think the future. I'm not sure, but I would think the future.
So how does just them being replaced, like...
Well, now they're going to no longer are the Jews going to have to approach close, and approaching close is what creates risks and dangers.
Is just saying a practical thing then?
I mean, you could call it practical, or you could call it, you know, philosophical, dangers, psychological, I don't know. It's, yeah, if their job is to come close, then they're going to come too close and they're going to stumble. So it's like a fence to protect them. So, I mean, in a certain sense, practical, but... You know, like there's a fence on our Sinai, for example, so people wouldn't, you know, come close. There's a grid, it's dangerous to come close, you know. Yeah, so if you look at the word, I'm more talking about, you guys are thinking like of deep questions. I'm talking syntax, okay? The syntax, grammar, okay?
Where did they construct the passive voice going now?
Okay, yes. Just the whole sentence structure?
Well, it says they're given... And then to do this,
It's long. It is a long
puzzle. It's long, but the subject keeps switching.
Okay. So. Okay. Good. Fine. But that's not what I'm going on. So Rashi goes on. I'm going on Rashi. I'm just Chamisha Palmim Nemer Bnei Shal Mikrosa. Says the word Bnei Shal 5 times in this pasuk. Okay. So I've given the Levim to Aaron and his sons from amongst Bnei Israel. To serve the Avodah of Bnei Yisrael and the Ol Moed, and to forgive, atone for Bnei Yisrael, and there won't be a Negev in Bnei Yisrael when Bnei Yisrael approach the Kodesh. Right? A lot of nouns, proper nouns, not too many pronouns. Right? You could have just said one noun, say Bnei Yisrael one time, that Naz Levim, have given Levim amongst from Aaron and his sons from amongst Bnei Yisrael, to do their avodah in the Ol Moed and to atone for them, and there won't be they won't have a plague when they approach the Kodesh, right? Amongst the days, them, right?
And that's what Pasuk Ozo is, you know, repeats Bnei Yisrael. I'm saying like it is stylistic.
Well, that's my shalom. Bnei Yisrael v'yem kol ha'shezer shosha kinesh elam Bnei Yisrael.
I mean, I guess that just phrases weird.
Okay. Yeah, perhaps. I mean, perhaps it does do it here, but I'm not sure that here is necessarily the right place to look, because whatever reason it's repeating it many times here might be a reason why in the same context. But I don't know. I don't know that the Torah does that all the time. Rashi seems to call attention to it. So it seemed to be... It does seem cumbersome when you know. So a sentence, you don't just keep repeating the same noun, proper noun, multiple times. Ultimately, you use pronouns. Right? Okay. Yeah. So Rashi says like this: Chamisha pamim nemar bnei shel mikrozah. Why? Lodia, to tell us chibasan, their love, Hashem's love for bnei Yisrael. Shenichbalu as karosayhem b'mikra echad, because their mention is their name, or their mention is repeated in one pasuk. Kamin chamisha chamshu Torah. Corresponding to the 5 books of the Torah. Okay? He loves them so much that he's repeating them as much as the 5 books of the Torah. Okay? Good thing it wasn't Trey Asar in the Torah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so any questions?
What does that mean?
Right, so what's the connection between that and that, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Why would saying the name a lot of times mean that he loves them, and why would he specifically make them parallel to the 5 books of Torah?
Yeah, great. Okay.
I've heard this thing before, of how the Torah has these expressions of love and showing Hashem's love for the Jews.
Yeah, it says that sometimes by counting. He counts them, yeah. After there's a plague, he counts them. This time he counts them a lot of times to show his love. Like a shepherd is counting his sheep, or a person counts his money. But I don't know if this one appears too often. But I mean, yeah, true. And I guess also what's interesting is like, why here? Right? I mean, you could repeat the Bnei Yisrael appears many times in the Torah. You could just randomly repeat Bnei Yisrael 5 times anywhere in the Torah and just say it's to show that he loves in life in the 5 books of the Torah.
It's right? Not an especially loving moment.
Okay.
it away.
Okay. Okay, any other questions, or are we ready to try to attempt to answer?
The questions we're answering are why showing love here,
right,
and what this has to do with Hamishia from Shaitoa.
Right, and I guess why repeating their name is showing love.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that one seems less.
Yeah. Someone asked that. Yeah, right. That seems reasonable to repeat a name.
Yeah, just if you're trying to indicate, like calling by name every time is like a different kind of connection than calling by a
pronoun.
I think Joey's family, they used to like, they didn't like, one of his siblings didn't like that the kid should ever call the parents he or she.
Really?
To always say mommy or daddy, like you don't refer to them by
he
or she. That's so funny.
Wow. That's like a third person thing, like in the from world, they do that with like rebbes. Does the rebbe want? Does the rebbe want this? Does the rebbe want that?
It's like too casual. Like you shouldn't say that.
So what they were? They were. They had that custom in the family.
Just one of his siblings was like, "You shouldn't call mommy she."
Oh, I see. Wow, that's interesting.
That seems more like respect than love, though.
Okay, seems to hear that. It's true.
Yeah.
What's that?
No pointing.
No pointing.
No counting.
Okay.
And they turned out okay.
Joey's alright.
Yeah. Alright. So, what did we say? Any thoughts?
I could see actually, like, from what Rachel was saying, this is not a particularly good moment for Bnei Yisrael being replaced by Luvian.
Right.
So I could see that theoretically the Pasuk would want to demonstrate that this shift was being done in a way that was to help Bnei Yisrael be able to do the Avodah and relate to things, and they weren't on the level to have the Bechoros do the Avodah. So this is an adjustment, because Hashem loves Bnei Yisrael, so you know what that means, that this is a way to, you know, plan B, so they can live properly according to the Torah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Good. Okay, anyone else?
Well, maybe the saying the names over and over, saying Bnei Yisrael, shows like a direction of attention towards this, towards these people. Like, I guess in terms of love, that's what, you know, the love is, the hashkacha towards Bnei Yisrael. So it's just the direction of the hashkacha, and Hashem's focus is on Bnei Yisrael.
Okay, good. Okay.
Maybe their role is to somehow, like, epitomize the five books of Torah.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Like, they're put in this place where they're supposed to represent, like, the will of God, basically, by approaching Kodesh, the Kodesh in a proper way. And, like, it's the same, like, I don't know, this part isn't clear, but it's the same type of goal that, you know, the five books of Torah would accomplish. I don't know, that wasn't very clear, but.
Okay. I hear the direction.
I have to think of
Yeah.
Just, like one thing, just in the analogy, there's something, I don't know, for me it's like a bit of a direction, is that Hashem, saying, like, Hashem loves them, like, but then what's the, Hashem doesn't love Chamisha from Shaitoa, right? Like, it's not like Hashem loves Bnei Yisrael like he loves something else.
Well, I think it means that he loves them such that their mention is repeated in this pasuk in accordance with the number of the five books of the Torah. Not necessarily like he loves the five books of the Torah, but the repetition corresponds to the five books of the Torah.
just the greatest.
Something like that. I mean, it doesn't have to follow that he loves the five books of Torah. Okay. It could just be there somehow being compared.
Something great.
Something that, or something. Yeah. 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 Yeah, okay, so just a methodological point, and then I was thinking similar to what Esty's saying, but, and I think you're implicit in the methodological point, is the hard part here, the hardest part here is the five books of Torah, right? That's odd. It's totally random, right? But less difficult is the repeating their names, right? So, my opinion, and it's just a personal taste, is like, when I saw this, I ignored the five books of Torah for the time being. And just pretended just that you repeated their names many times. And try to understand what's going on in the parasha. And then worry about the five of the particular later. To me, the five books of the Torah is a particular. Right? And it's like, although it's the most difficult, interesting particular, I just feel not in a position to deal with the particular before we have an idea about the general statement as all. You know, so we'd be like stabbing, taking shots in the dark just to explain the particular without having a theory about what's the main idea here. You know what I mean? That's one step I took. And then the other step I took, which is a question we asked already and I think we're starting to answer, is it's a relevant question to ask, what's this doing here? In theory, this question could, this statement could have come up anyway. You know, so in theory, we read the psukim around this in order to provide context. But if you come across this Rashi, you may not do so. You may just see this pasuk, just read this one pasuk, read this Rashi, and you don't know where it's coming from. And it's like, wow, that's weird. But context already does direct us. Once we see the context, that point, as you're saying and you're elaborating on, it's not a very loving moment. It seems more reasonable to understand why Hashem wants to express His love. You know, if you didn't realize the context of what's going on here, that He originally chose the Bechorim and now He was replacing them and all that, you may not appreciate, you know, the Rashi. You just took it in isolation. So it's a good idea in general to get a sense where a Rashi fits in the greater picture. Okay? So that being said, as we pointed out, so the Bechorim, just to point out, there's a difference, what's one fundamental difference between the Bechoros being the chosen ones or the Levium? Is it just an accidental difference or is it like a different, something fundamentally different about those two plans?
Well, you said the Levium were chosen for a specific purpose, whereas Bechorim would be sort of arbitrary, just like the oldest of each family.
Again, what are the two sides? The Bechorim, they're both chosen to do the Avodah, the Mikdash. Whether it's Shevet Levi or the Bechorim. But now, what's the difference between it being... Let's say they're chosen for the same thing, but what I'm saying, what's the difference whether the group chosen is Bechorim or the group chosen is Shevet Levi?
She just said
yeah,
that...
Yeah, the end part of it, right?
She just said that... The Levim is like a selected group, whereas
right.
The Bechoros is more like an arbitrary.
Right.
Whoever
that's
is
good.
More first is
right.
Perfect.
Okay, good.
It's also the Bechoros are spread throughout
B'nai
Israel,
and
everybody's
right.
Represented.
Right. Okay, good. Yeah, good. Right. Is that Tamar? That's Tamar? You said that previously?
Tamar,
yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, see, the Bechoros, arguably, is a better system. It was the original system, it seems. It means that every family has a representative, right? I mean, yeah, fine. Almost every family, whatever, right? Point is, they're all around Israel, which is advantageous. After all, the priests, whoever they may be, are the teachers of Torah. They initiate us in the ways of Avodah Hashem, of Kapara. They're leaders. And if you have someone in each and every family, or every few families, every other family, being a leader, in theory, they have much more access, much more coverage, so to speak. It seems to be a more, you know, spread out system. Permeates the society in a much more in rigorous, full way. Right? And that was arguably what happened. What's that?
I still don't really understand why that would be advantageous, though, because isn't it better to have a group of people that are selected for this purpose rather than spreading it around the entire nation if you have a job that's so dangerous like the Kodesh? Like, it seems like if each family had a representative, it would be really difficult to ensure that a member of each and every family has the correct ideas.
Well, I mean, in a certain sense, it is a group. It's just a different group. So, I mean, there's going to be Kohen clubs and whatever it is. I mean, they're going to organize and they're going to be each family. They're going to have Bechor. You're going to send them to Bechor school, whatever it is. And argue. I mean, you're right. I hear what you're saying. There are implicit dangers, which is ultimately why it didn't quite work out. But I'm saying if it would work out, I'm saying there's a benefit. In a perfect system, it's better. Now, you're right. There are greater risks. Perhaps. I'm not sure. But whatever. I'm not arguing that there aren't risks. There were risks, and they failed, and therefore was replaced. What I'm saying is I could see why, if they use the Bechira properly, there is a value to a society. The idea is having leaders who are able to be spread out throughout society is a value. As opposed to, it kind of becomes like there's this elite class called the Kosher Levi. Right? You're born into it. I mean, I guess they are born into Bechor also, but basically you kind of become this like sub-society, which is separate from everybody else.
But the Bechor is
disconnected. It's harder for them to impact everybody because they're somewhat others, right? People, they don't necessarily relate to your average man. But here, everyone is a family member. You look out for the people in your family and your whatever, in your neighborhood. Here, there is a separation between Levim and the Klal Yisrael, just by class, so to speak. It's like a class system as opposed to having it built into every family.
The Bechorim also had a common experience that they were not killed in Mitzrayim, which sort of united them and gave them that status, you know.
It's true.
Which would have helped them probably in this, status.
It's true. It's true. They were related to Hashem in that type of way. It's true. But despite that, they did fail. They failed in their leadership. It didn't prevent the Chet HaEgel. Arguably, it was because I don't know if it says openly that the Bechoros did the Chet HaEgel any more than anyone else. But it seems like where they fail, arguably they're the leaders. So if the nation fails, the leaders are responsible. It's a massive failure on the part of the nation. The leaders somehow should have prevented. I don't know exactly what they could have done. There is an argument. Is this? I once wanted to learn with Aaron. We worked out a whole account. There's this problem is that there are very few Bechoros. It's hard to work out why there's so few Bechoros. If you work out the math.
When they did
the ratio in Klal Yisrael is 603,000. The amount of Bechoros are like 22,000. It's like your ratio is like 1 to 30 or something like that. It's like way off. So it's like a question. Well, how do you explain that? So one of the ways we have to explain it is that many of the people who died in the Chet HaEgel were Bechoros. And therefore, the count of the Bechoros is after the Chet HaEgel. But arguably, if they were the leaders, they were the leaders for good and leaders for bad. So arguably many of them were the ones who were killed out and who died. So that we had to work out the numbers, how many were killed, it's not, there's all, you know. But either way, it was a failure of the Bechor. So even though it was an optimal system, and that was the initial system, but it failed due to their Bechira. Not that it had to fail, but it did fail. And it wasn't going to continue on that way. It couldn't work that way. You couldn't have people who were associated with the Chet HaEgel being the leaders. On the contrary, Shevet Levi, who totally withheld, stayed away from that, they became the new designees for this role. Okay? But now, you might think, lest one may walk away thinking, the people at that time, and the people, us, reading the Torah, that somehow, Hashem is rejecting Bnei Yisrael. But the Bechoros, I mean Bnei Yisrael, because the Bechoros are Bnei Yisrael. They're the representatives of the whole, you know, the widespread nation, all the Shvatim. You might look at it, Hashem, Bnei Yisrael, the Bechoros, failed. The 11 Shvatim failed. Hashem's turning away from them and picking up with the Shevet Levi. After all, that kind of looks like what's going on. He's throwing away the Bechoros. Okay, see you later. You guys no longer have any representatives in my house, so to speak. and now we're just the Levim. So you might say Hashem's mad at the Jews, at Bnei Israel, and he's rejecting them. He doesn't want them to come near. Right? It's kind of the way it seems. Right? And now you're doing the swap, getting rid of them, right? You're replacing them. So as such, it seems to be important to... that's not true. Okay, let's start with that. It's not true. That's not the case. It's not that Hashem is rejecting Bnei Yisrael. He's protecting Bnei Yisrael. It's not that he hates them. It's that he loves them, so to speak. And that he sees the need to protect them lest there will be a negev. To leave them in their position of power, in their position of closeness, will ultimately lead to their undoing, as it did in the Chayda Egel, and they're not going to last. They're going to keep having these magefas, and right, it's not going to last. So, in order to protect Bnei Yisrael, because Hashem wants to, has a special relationship with Bnei Yisrael, as reflected in the Mashal of Love, so he's protecting them. He's setting up a system of ensuring that they're going to be able to be protected, to be maintained, to not have a negaf. He's giving special guardians to be mechaber for their sins, to guard them from coming too close to the mikdash, to basically prevent the negaf. So this is a great act of love towards Bnei Yisrael, although it isn't perceived as such, and it doesn't feel that way. That is what it is. Like sometimes a parent could say, I'm not letting you go here, so-and-so place, because I love you. What do you mean? You hate me. If you would love me, you'd let me go. No, it's not safe for you. I love you so much, I'm not going to let you go. Whatever. I'm sure I fill in the blanks of the story, right? But so that's, it's not perceived as that to the child, or it's Bnei Yisrael. So in Hashem conveying this sentiment, this message, he wants to make it absolutely clear that this is the case. That it's through love. It's out of love. And a way to talk often, like for instance, when you love someone, you want to say their name. It's like what by human being at least. It's like you want to hear it. Like their name is music to your ears. You know, I'm sure, I don't know poetry, but I'm sure there are love poems of a beloved who keeps saying, like I'm sure it would make good poetry if instead of using pronouns, you keep saying your beloved's name. Right? And that's expression of like it's music to your ears. You love hearing it. You can't say the pronoun because you just like hearing the word. You like hearing Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael. And it's awkward, and that's part of the beauty of it. It's awkward, but it doesn't matter. You don't care that it's awkward. You're willing to throw away grammar and the use of pronouns and the efficiency of the sentence for the sake of being able to express your love. So when Hashem is telling them, I'm replacing you, he's saying, Bnei Yisrael, I'm replacing Bnei Yisrael because I'm worried about you, Bnei Yisrael. I don't want to negate Bnei Yisrael when Bnei Yisrael goes into the Mikdash. He's talking in a way, and is conveyed in a way in the Torah, in the verbiage of the Torah, that this is, although it appears like an expression of hate and of rejection, on the contrary, it's love and protection. Right? So, it's interesting, you don't think of the Torah as doing things like this. It's interesting, like it's poetic. It's like written in a way, which I think is the case a lot of the time with Drash and with Derech of the Torah, is that it changes from grammar. That's why I think, I've heard Rebbe say this, that's why Chazal, like Ibn Ezra, Alam, Farsh, and Rashi are so into grammar. Because it's one of the ways the Torah teaches ideas is by throwing off the grammar from that which would be appropriate in order to reference an idea. So you write the normal way to write it would have been X, Torah writes it as Y, and that alludes to some idea. So you have to understand the proper grammar in order to see the... You know, that turns away from proper grammar and thereby to pick up on them. So this is like a good example. This is, you know, to be an expert in grammar, to realize that you use pronouns and not whatever, but it's an example of how reading it itself makes you come to the idea that, wow, he's repeating Bnei Yisrael a lot of times. Okay? Alright. So the question then, assuming we're okay with this, is now what's the five times, can I get the five books of Moses, right? Okay, is there a question before we move forward?
Did we, I missed a little part of the Shiro, but did we talk about how is this exactly the representing the relationship that the Holiness Lady is going to achieve
didn't, because, I mean, you know, generations later, Levi, you know, we have Korah.
It's true we have Korach. I guess it doesn't mean that there's no such thing as a group which is never going to sin. But I guess the Cheder Egel is not just any sin, and it was pervasive in the Kal Yisrael. And the Shevet Levi, in this early infancy of Bnei Yisrael, the Shevet Levi took a stand and avoided the Cheder Egel. So apparently that was necessary. That was sufficient to be able to set them up as being the appropriate leaders. Now, it's true, there were groups amongst the Levi, and there's always groups in every Shevet who are going to sin. No Shevet is perfect. But it doesn't mean they're short against sinning. But the Cheder Egel is not just any Cheder.
Maybe it also gives Levi a special name that is associated with that exact, great leader, so that affects. Just by isolating that.
What name is that?
It attaches to Levi a significance, and that significance is that they're the ones that didn't do the
Yeah, correct.
Short of
that. Their early model is that it exemplifies what a true Oved Hashem should be. Correct. Got it. And their choice is tied back to the Cheder Egel to show that ultimately any of the Hashem has to be antithetical, totally removed from Avodah Zarah. Yeah.
It's interesting,
Yaakov
didn't know about this when he was giving other brachas. Like, he didn't know maybe it would be that.
I know. You know, I did work on that with Aaron once. Is that in the bracha, Shimon and Levi, I think.
Right there.
Shimon and Levi were like the worst, right? They were not given very good treatment. But somehow, Shimon ended up not going well. Shimon was like, in the Brachos of Moshe, Shimon was even left out. And Levi was given the greatest Brachos in the Brachos of Moshe. So it seems that somehow Levi took it right, and Shevet Levi took it right, and took the Tochacha properly, and elevated themselves and became the greatest of the Shvatim. And Shimon seemingly turned the other way and didn't quite, you know.
Isn't that from who are the two people who kind of first kills?
I forgot, there's a whole shiur, maybe I'm getting to give shiur, I don't remember, but the whole thing, the difference. It is fascinating how in Sheva and Berachos Yaakov they were the same, and in Berachos of Moshe and Zos Bracha they were totally different. It was a short amount of time, or whatever, 40 years, or even it was soon thereafter. I mean, no, it was a long time actually, back by Levi, you know. But still.
Didn't Yaakov learn with Levi in Mitzrayim? Like, Yosef was busy, he had to do the
stuff
he had to do politically, and Yaakov, like, gave over himself to Levi?
I don't know. Not that I'm aware of, but maybe it is. I don't know if you find it. You can find it. You know, it sounds interesting, but I'm not aware.
I think that Levi was learning the whole time.
Well, they weren't involved in the Shiva, right? The Shiva,
they weren't involved in the Shiva. Yeah, but I think that was because Yaakov Avinu couldn't teach it to Yosef.
Oh.
So he taught it to Levi.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. If you can find that, that would be. Yeah, okay, good. So back to the five books, right? This is the five books. So what's the shaykhas to these five books, right?
This is just the stat in the dark, but the Torah is complete and it's perfect. Like, it's not, like, by saying that, maybe it's saying that they can proceed and feel good, like not like they're like in the second best type of scenario.
Okay. I hear you. Yeah, I think we need a stab here, you know? It's the Gematria. Yeah. Okay, so I'll tell you what I was thinking. Okay, it's also a stab. And it gets back to, I think, what someone told me that was Rav Pesach Shir was about, right? On Shavuos. So, namely, so you can ask a question like this. It's saying is, God is not rejecting them. He loves them, he's made, he's keeping them, right? So you could ask a question, why not? Why not? After all, they failed. They've succeeded. So, I mean, it does sound like a reasonable hava, I mean, right? So why not? Like, how exactly are you going to convince B'nai Yisrael that he's not rejecting them? I mean, is there a justification for that, or is it just like, whatever, God just loves them? Right?
I mean, why isn't God rejecting
yeah.
them? Like,
okay. Right? Why isn't he rejecting them? Is it just Hashem? You could just say, look, whatever, we can't ask that. Or you could say, look, Hashem's a Marachim, and whatever. But I'm just saying, is there any...
It's also hard because they were going to be destroyed after they got Yisrael, and Baruch Hu was going to change their relationship.
Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And everything.
Right, all that.
It definitely seems like...
Yeah, right. It seemed like he was gonna, right? Or it was on his mind. Right. So I want to say is because... The reason why is because the Torah, the system of Torah, Chamish Chamshah Torah, the system of Torah is a system of maintaining true ideas in the world via a nation, not via an elite group. Okay, that's the idea. That's what Rabbi said and Rabbi Bezos said. And this is like an old idea, but prior to Torah, you had Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the Shvatim. The ideas of the Torah, the profound ideas of the Torah, passed down from great man to great people, right? The ideas to philosophers are maintaining the ideas at the highest level, passing them down. But ultimately, that failed. It didn't last over the long term. The nation of Mitzrayim assimilating, becoming part of the Mitzris, and like 49 levels of Tuma, and right, it doesn't work. Isolated individual philosophers, as great as they are, aren't going to make it over the test of time. As the example, I guess Rebbe sent some tapes, like the Greek philosophers. You know, you have Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, and then who knows? Right? They've died out. There's no trace of them. As great as philosophers are, it just doesn't have staying power. The plan of Arsinai was a nation. To have an entire nation who are passing down this body of knowledge. How does the nation pass down the body of knowledge? The thinkers, the philatim, the chum, pass it down through teaching it. The am passes it down through doing the mitzvahs, through living the life of the Torah mitzvahs. And the life of Torah mitzvahs itself contains our actions which are built upon the ideas, the foundational ideas of the Torah. So every Jew keeps kosher, and thereby attests to the fact that the life of self-control is a good life, and maintains that idea that that's a good way to live. And every Jew keeps Shabbos and attests to the idea of a creator of the universe, and so on and so forth. Every mitzvah is maintained by the nation as a whole, and it lasts because a nation could last. When you have a nation which talks to every person at every level, to the greatest chacham and to the plain simple people at every level, and to kids, and to everyone in between, could be moved, and the Torah has something for everybody, and the system is maintained by the nation. And that has staying power. And through that, the great thinkers throughout the ages have access to this great knowledge. But the Torah is maintained through the nation. If you'd wipe out B'nai Yisrael and just leave Shevet Levi, then you're going back to the elite system. You're wiping out the plain people, and you're just going back to the elite, Shevet Levi. That's not the plan of the Torah. That's not the whole Torah is a book crafted for B'nai Yisrael. It's not a book crafted for Levium. For an isolated, small group of elites. So, there's a nation, and a nation sometimes fails, and the Torah has protections. When the nation fails, you have to set up a system in order to help protect them, and there has to be Mechaper, and there's Karbanos, and all that. So it's like it's because of the five books of the Torah, what is why God is not throwing out B'nai Yisrael and just staying with Shevet Levi. It would be like a different Torah. And just like the Torah is not being rejected, so B'nai Yisrael is being rejected. Shevet Levi is not being, instead, Shevet Levi is protecting B'nai Yisrael and allowing the system of the Torah to carry on, because that's how it works, by having a nation, and the nation needs protection, fine. So Shevet Levi will take on the role of enabling B'nai Yisrael to maintain the Torah And so the five books of the Torah is just a reference. It's alluding to the fact, he's showing their love, but he's not just saying, I love you, I'm not going to throw you away. I love you because you are the vehicle of Kiddush Hashem in the world. You are the vehicle which God chose to be the most appropriate vehicle of carrying on the Torah. The Torah is the way for Kiddush Hashem to happen in the world. And therefore you should have confidence. It's not just paying lip service that God's saying, I love you five times, but it's conveying a concept as to why that is and why you should feel comfort in the fact that, you know, despite the fact that you failed, the plan is still on, albeit shifted a little bit towards the Levim instead of the Bechara. You know what I mean? So the solace comes not only when you assure the person you love them, but where you convey to them meaning and insight and to back it up. Okay? Good? Question?
Yeah. You mentioned that Judaism isn't, like, there's no idea of, like, an elite group necessarily, but isn't Judaism itself sort of an elite group? Like, the obligation of the mitzvot is given to a specific group rather than the entire world.
Well, it depends what you mean. I'm not saying there is no such thing as an elite group. I'm saying that's not the plan of the Torah. I mean, you have Levim, but the Levim are ambassadors for Bnei Yisrael. You have Bnei Yisrael, and they're ambassadors for the world. So, like, you have the Kohanim for Bnei Yisrael, and then you have Klal Yisrael as Mamlechas Kohanim for the world. So, just like it is an analogy of the Leviyah Kohanim, Leviyah Sheva Levi is to Bnei Yisrael, as Bnei Yisrael is to the world. So it's like, there are groups, but it's not exclusively groups. It's groups in service of the greater good. But the world is a different point. I mean, the way in which God's knowledge is maintained to the world and conveyed to the world is through Bnei Yisrael. But Bnei Yisrael only could exist if you have a group set aside and set apart as being the protectors and the mechaperim and the leaders. So when I say there's not an elite, I mean God, the system is not maintained exclusively through an elite. It doesn't mean that there isn't a, so to speak, an elite group within Bnei Yisrael. Shevet Levi does have a role in that as such. But it's not because God only cares about them. God, the Torah is maintained through everybody, but within the Torah there is an elite. And just like God cares about all of Bnei Adam, it's just that the way all of Bnei Adam have access to the ideas is through Klal Yisrael. Just like we need Levim to be our leaders, the world needs Bnei Yisrael to be leaders. Not every person is capable of being a leader. Things don't work that way. And no one has a leader. Okay.
I'm saying we value an elite insofar as they're facilitating, like, the perfection of everyone else around them, I guess?
Yes. Right, exactly. It's a tool. It's not because...
Not as an exclusive...
Right. It's not because God only cares about them. God cares about everybody. But the way to care about everybody is to assign, to make an intelligent plan, and assign a group who is best suited to be able to protect the greater all. And if you treat everybody exactly the same, then everyone's going to fail. You need to have, there's a value to taking out a group who's, people need leaders, like in a company. If you have a CEO, you say, look, everybody will be the same. You're not going to have a CEO, you're not going to have a boss, you have everyone's just going to have care. You're not going to be able to have, it's for the good of a company that there's a CEO, there's a vice CEO, whatever, the CFO, all the different positions. There's human resources, and there's the janitors, and there's whatever, and that's what allows a good company to thrive. You're just going to say, we're all the same, and everyone's just going to do the exact same thing. It's nice to think that way, but it's not going to work. You need, so the elite, it's not like the only person that matters in the company is the CEO. It's just that that's the way a company is going to work, is by having someone on top who's going to be able to right the ship, keep it in the proper path. So it's not like Hashem only cares about the Levim. He loves Bnei Yisrael, all of Bnei Yisrael. But the way Bnei Yisrael is going to be maintained is through having Levim or protecting us. And likewise, he cares about all of the world. But the way the world is going to have access to the knowledge is through Bnei Yisrael. Yeah. And that's always interesting. Allah has Kohanim. You see, we are called Kohanim. Relative to the world, we're called Kohanim. Relative to the Kohanim, we're called Israelim or whatever. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? All right, yeah?
Just a comment. Somebody asked before about Shiva Irving.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, just what you were saying about, like, when the, right, Nitna Torah, Nitchat Shemalachal, at that point already, like, Reuben was already out of it. I don't know what,
yeah, right,
what it was
going to
be, but, like, it has now not
yeah, right.
relevant.
You're right, that's
point.
True. That's prior to Torah. I mean, Bechoros was really at
Yishis
Mitzrayim at that time. Right, it's true. It's true, arguably until the Egal, it was Bechorim. Right, it's a good point. Yeah, that's why I'm not so sure about Levi and Mitzrayim. That's why I'm curious if that's.
I just remember reading it when I was.
Okay. Okay, if you come across it again. Okay, good. All right, everybody. So have a good night.
Thank you, Bruce.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Sure.